Is the script really that bad?
No, I don't hate it at all. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. I have a couple ideas how to make it better.
Oh, naturally.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 13, National Lampoon's Something Wilder, starring Ryan Something. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Not Sarah. Sarah's still out. Adam Grossworth is back. Hello, Adam.
Hello.
Are you ready to talk about this episode? Lucky number 13.
But yes, I am ready.
Well, before we get into it, we want to tell you what's happening in the club for our paid subscribers this Friday, March 13th. Spooky. It's going to be Again With This 279. We already announced it, but we'll say it again. Let's watch Vanessa Estelle Williams in Candyman, the 2021 version. It is on Peacock. We'll link that in the show notes. Dave was gracious enough to sit in on that, and we talked about it and are excited to bring it to you because, surprisingly, two horror movies that are more thoughtful than you might think or remember. I think we had a good conversation, and you can hear it if you join us. Again, with this podcast.com/club tells you how to get in, and any level of support gets you those 4 Friday bonus episodes a month. All right, we put it off long enough. Let's get into it. Starting with our C-plot, Jack is forced to consider whether Greek life is for him. We open at the frat house, following a pair of apparently female legs as they walk through, driving all of the guys absolutely wild, like to a degree where it's like
a lot.
Tex Avery wolves, and she's just a girl in a dress and boots. Like, relax, you have access to porn, I would think. But anyway, the legs are Jen's. She finds Jack's shooting pool and asks why it feels like all the guys are staring at her. Jack says it's because they are, and Jen is a little flattered, I guess, because it's daytime. Interest doesn't seem so menacing. She's there to hand Jack his mail and tell him there's a letter on top from the college that seems official. He takes a look and returns to the game, causing Jen to sputter that he's on academic probation. Jack sarcastically says, sure, you can read my mail. She asks what happened. He just failed a few classes. He'll make it up this term. Jen has more to gasp at him about this, but he says she can play or leave, and she goes with the latter. And, you know, not to brag, this never happened to me, but I feel like if you failed multiple classes in your first semester at college, someone would call you, like you would have an academic advisor intervene.
Yeah. Like, you might get an incomplete and a chance to make it up. Like, this is, mm-hmm. It feels late for this. I guess part of the point is he didn't get the letter, but it continued confusion about the timeline. This is not helping.
Right,
about
true.
Understanding when we are in the year.
Yes. So when we see Jack next, he is trotting down the stairs at the frat house, inviting Blossom to play mud football. Blossom has a girl coming over, and hey, he heard Jack had a petite blonde cutie there earlier. Jack says that was just Jen, the human buzzkill, hassling him about his grades. Blossom doesn't know what she would have to be worried about, since I guess he remembers from when they were recruiting Jack that he was on the honor roll in high school. And Jack casually mentions his academic probation, and Blossom's whole manner flips immediately as he says this is not cool. Makes the frat look bad to have a new brother flunk in classes, and Blossom's going to have to hear about it from the dean. Jack insists that he'll make it up. Blossom thinks maybe Jack should be studying instead of playing football. Don't they have a quiz coming up in sociology? And I thought the whole thing about the room in the last episode was that Blossom was an upperclassman, so I don't know why they would be in the same class or why I care. But Jack thinks that he doesn't see Blossom studying, and Blossom shoots back that he's not on academic probation, and they do a classic in this era, endless shot of a person reacting when they could have just called cut and moved on.
It's a lot of nothing, really. Yeah, the whole thing.
Totally. So then Jack's returning to the frat house after class some other day. Blossom blew off the sociology class he and Jack are both in because he asks what he missed. And Jack says they got their quizzes back. Jack got an A and shows him to prove it. Blossom's happy and apologizes for the other day. He just wanted Jack to know that Blossom had his back. Jack says it felt more like Blossom was on his back, and Blossom says if it did, then Jack took it wrong. Classic, hey. I'm sorry you were offended territory.
It's just a smidgen of innuendo.
Indeed. Jack still looks pissed, so Blossom suggests they celebrate his A that night. And so when we see him next, he's at the bar at Civilization.
nonsense.
Total ridiculous. Like, it's not a bar, it's a restaurant. That's not where you would go to probably get served as a underage person either, I would
yeah,
think.
Like, restaurants have bars in them, but why would they go to this, these guys go to this place unless, like, Pacey can get them free drinks or something, which feels unlikely.
Well, he doesn't enter until very long so after, yeah. So I would assume it's not that, and that Pacey wouldn't get free drinks for the other guys. He doesn't know
right.
them.
No, not at all. It's just the only set they have that has a bar in it. It's
That's
ridiculous.
The reason, of course. We all know. When Jack orders another beer, a barmaid comments that he's starting kind of early, and Jack says they don't call it happy hour for nothing. And then Eric appears, telling the barmaid to go easy on Jack. He had a rough week. Jack is somehow surprised to learn Eric's already heard all about Jack's academic probation and how Blossom went off on him. And Eric says, it's just hard to keep a secret among brothers. Jack grumbles that it's hard for the brothers not to talk trash about each other, as though his high school friend group is any more discreet. Like, talking trash about each other, it's what people do.
Yeah.
Eric says they just needed to know if it was okay to take Jack out. And Jack bitches that brotherhood is conditional then. And Eric says they'll still like him if he's a little bit stupid. They'll just use words with fewer syllables when he's around, which was a little funny.
Yeah.
And then Eric joins the rest of their jerk brothers in the corner while Jack barks for his beer again and childishly throws his napkin. And when we see him again, it's many beers later. Jack is staggering back to his stool when Blossom decides to try big brothering him. Clip two.
See, McPhee, if you walk the line between partying, studying, maintain the balance, it's all good.
Oh, gee, Blossom. Your concern for my well-being is so touching, I think I'm gonna cry.
What's the problem now? I thought we were having a nice time here.
Oh, we are, man. I mean, we're best buds, right? Until I slip up and do something to embarrass the mighty Sigma Epsilon. Like, fail a couple of classes, right, guys?
Man, I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't care about my troubles. All you care about is how it affects the house.
Damn straight.
So that's how it's gonna be now.
That's how it's always been. The house comes first. What, you didn't get that?
I guess not.
Yeah, well, don't go getting all emotional on me. Your eyes welling up and whatnot.
Man, it's like talking to a chick.
That's a good one, man.
Is it?
I had to include it because I just love the wild line and imagine that extra telling his friends, that was me. But yeah, this is not cool.
No, everything about it is so unfortunate. Like, Jack's decline is... I feel realistic. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make me like enjoy the character or watching it, but like I get it. I mean, guess Blossom is also realistic for a frat guy, but like even before the chick crack, like he's right. I was not in a frat, or I avoided frats actively, but like this is true, I think, or at least a trope that, you know, like, yes, they need to keep their grades up. If a new pledge, especially, they're going to get blamed, yada, yada. But he's such a prick about it. Like, even before he is actively, openly being a prick, he's just, like, so officious. And, like, what reaction are you expecting?
Yeah, at least on 90210 with, like, Keg House shit like this, it would be go to our files and find something you can use to cheat. Like,
right.
That's, you know.
That too.
I'm not going to say that's supportive, but it's more helpful than stop drinking all the time or whatever. But yeah, I do. I agree that it's realistic that Jack would decline, because a lot of people do when they get to college. It's like too much freedom. They don't know what to do with it.
Dumping Toby and being in a frat. Like, there's just a lot. There's a lot happening in his world. And like, this is very realistic to me. Mm-hmm. Also hard to watch, and then made harder to watch by the fact that nobody is giving him any support.
No.
Like, he's clearly going through something. And like, from Jen on down, it's just like, well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, figure it out. Okay.
Yeah, I know we're not supposed to like Blossom, like the show is doing its job, but I still was like, could you be a little nicer, please?
Yeah. Well, the scene's not over. Jack throws a stool aside, breaking a glass, and dares Blossom to say that to his face. Eric tries to de-escalate just as Pacey and Audrey appear from somewhere else to join the effort. Jack never realized what a jackass Blossom was, he says, and Blossom shoots back that Jack has been a disappointment all around. Rushing Jack was supposed to clean up the frat's image, but all he's done is make it worse. It wasn't even worth bringing him in, which is like, this is going to trigger Jack, of course. This is the last thing he wants to hear, which is like, you're a liability because you're different or whatever.
Yeah, you're a token.
Mm-hmm. So Jack throws a punch, turns into a small brawl, Jack smashing another glass in the process, and Eric and the rest of the brothers drag Blossom out while Pacey wraps a towel around Jack's bleeding hand. And the next day, Pacey's at the restaurant when Jack shuffles in and slides him a check to cover part of what he owes in damages. He'll get Pacey the rest when he can. Pacey says Jack could have gotten him fired last night, which would be a problem because it would interrupt Pacey's record of quitting all the time. But Jack winces and Pacey asks if he wants to talk about it. Clip 3.
About what? About whatever it is that's making you do this to yourself, man. What exactly am I doing to myself, Pacey? Well, for starters, you're flunking yourself out of school. And you can talk to me all you like about makeup exams, because believe me, I'm the king of makeup exams. And you can tell me that the whole thing's crap and you don't care about your grades, but I'm not going to buy that, Jack, especially not from you. Because I know how hard you work to get yourself into college. I know that it must terrify you to be on academic probation. And it terrifies you because you just don't know how you got to this point, right? All you're doing was cutting loose, having a little bit of fun. I mean, believe me, man, I understand that. I've been there. I know what it's like.
What do you want from me?
Huh? Nothing. I'm just curious. I'm just curious, because from my perspective, you're flunking out of school and you're drinking like you got a death wish. Also, you can hang out with a bunch of guys who pretty much attacked you last night.
They didn't attack me last night.
They didn't attack you?
No.
Jack, it was 10-on-1 in there. And they left you here, bleeding, just in case you forgot. So I'm just curious, is it worth it? Are they worth it?
Pacey's giving Jack a lot to think about.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not. But it's also funny, like, just over the arc of the season, of the tension between pro and anti-Greek life portrayals. Like, it seems like the writer's room is at war with itself of, like, the frat is good for Jack versus the frat is a bunch of assholes. So,
yeah.
Anyway, this seems to hit home so hard that Jack just says he has to go. And what is missing from this conversation is Pacey asking, what would your sister say if she could see you right now? Because that would really be the death blow. But
yeah,
you know.
But she doesn't exist anymore. So
nope, she's poofed away. No idea who he had a sister. What? Moving on to our B plot. Joey trades Elliot in. We open on Joey and Elliot chastely sitting on her bed as he complains that Wilder's book is barely a step up from Jackie Collins' All Smut and No Substance, which, like, this makes me think it's good.
Yeah, this is actually not how it was described.
No. Joey teases him for being familiar with Collins' work. Elliot, ordering Joey not to distract him with her little hair flippy thing, says he just wants Joey to admit that she likes the book because she thinks Wilder is cute. She claims she can't, because that's not true. She counters that the only reason Elliot doesn't like the book is that he thinks it's affecting his mojo with the ladies, which feels like a line we need more context for in the show slash between their characters. Like, Elliot is clearly not some kind of smooth operator. He denies having any mojo. Joey purrs that she thinks he has a little, which emboldens him to ask if she wants to eat something or see something with him on Friday. He knows it's only Monday, but people make plans. Joey thinks that sounds like he's asking her out for dinner and a movie, but Elliot says that just sounds so date, and the way he phrased it sounded better to him in his mind. But Joey accepts, and he looks adorably shocked. And then Audrey enters and quickly looks away. Clip 4.
Whoa, whoa. Am I interrupting? Are there naked people in here?
No.
Oh.
So cute. Everything about this, including what's his name? Elliot. Already forgot his name, but very adorable.
Yep. Audrey goes on to tease Elliot about using product in his hair, which he takes as his cue to leave. And when he's gone, we get this. Clip 5.
Someone's got a boyfriend.
Audrey, your elementary school methods of toning aren't going to work this time.
Who's got a boyfriend? Oh, Joey's
okay,
got a boyfriend.
Okay, tickle me one more time. I swear I will bite you.
Seriously, Joey. What's going on with you, a nice guy? Is he like your study or what?
His name is Elliot, first of all. He's not my boyfriend. I have no boyfriend. We're just getting to know each other.
But you like him.
What's not to like? He's a nice guy.
It's not the point, but first of all, I don't think Elliot does use product in his hair. And second of all, we are way past the point of you're gay if you use product in your hair. Like,
oh, I didn't even think that's what she was getting at.
Or whatever it is. Like, I mean, right. Yes, boys use product all through the 90s. Like, this is not a trend.
It is possible he flat irons his hair, though, because I think his hair is naturally curly.
Is possible, because his hair does look real weird. But
yes,
that's a separate issue.
True. Somewhere on campus later, Elliot runs up to Joey and makes sure she likes Indian food for Friday. some people don't like curry. Not him, but if Joey doesn't like naan, what's the point? Like, why highlight the naan? Sort of a side dish. Joey tells him he's so odd, and he immediately panics that she means he's too odd, but she doesn't. And then Wilder joins them to say they're both late for his class. Joey shoots back that he is too, and Elliot runs off to escape the banter cloud, which sadly is not dissipating. Clip six.
You, wait, I have news on a Lazar front.
Uh-oh. Good news or news that means I'll be in the files all weekend.
How quickly they turn. We're finished. Or rather, you're finished. I now plan on benefiting from the fruits of your hard labor by getting published in an obscure journal that no one, not even my mother, will wind up reading. So what do you say?
About what? You know, for an English teacher, you don't talk too good.
Dinner, Friday night. I'm taking you all out to celebrate. Was that better?
Much.
Good. It's going to be fancy, so wear your best jeans.
Not a problem. I'll be there.
Great. And now you're officially late for my class. What are we going to do with you, Joey Potter?
Friday night.
Oops. She did it.
Oh, I hate it.
It's so bad, and it gets worse. Joey, of course, realizes she has a conflict, just like Elliot was so eager to avoid by asking her out so early, because she is a shithead. In Audrey and Joey's dorm room later, Pacey's crabbing that carpooling to work was a mistake because Audrey's making him wait while she does yoga. But she says she's done. Plus, they can't leave until they help Joey with her dilemma. And ignoring Joey's warning bug eyes, Audrey lays out the situation to Pacey. Joey made plans with two guys for the same night, one with the nice guy who has boyfriend potential other than his sweater vests, and the other with Joey's hot prof. Joey says the plan with Wilder is an academic group activity, but Audrey says that doesn't mean it couldn't end in the two of them wrapped around each other like squid. Okay. Joey objects to the image, but Audrey has actually given this quite a bit of thought. Clip seven.
And if I were to cancel on Elliot tonight, it would only be to further my academic career.
Huh. Hey, now correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you already way ahead of the curve on the academic career? The only thing you don't have going for you right now is a social life, right?
I have a social life. What is this? Socializing.
All right, listen. I'm all for you bedding down with a gorgeous professor.
Oh, yeah. Been there. Done that. It's good.
But quite frankly, I don't think you have the guts. Which is fine, because nice guy has serious boyfriend potential, which means that there's no reason not to go out with him. Unless...
Unless...
Unless what?
Well, unless you're not ready for a boyfriend yet.
Why wouldn't I be ready for a boyfriend?
Boyfriends are time-consuming things, and... Some people think that they're ready, but they're not. And it's not just going to dinner a bunch of times and getting greasy afterwards.
It's not?
No, it's letting your guard down. You know, getting past the small talk and really allowing yourself to be intimate with somebody new. Are you really sure that you're ready to do that?
Yes, 100% ready.
Okay, great. Then I guess you'll be going out with Nice Guy tonight.
I think we can all... object to Pacey just casually saying, oh, been there, it's great. Especially since Audrey has no reaction. Like, has she already heard that story?
You're right. I kind of thought it was cute. I understand why it's not, but like, because it's Pacey. And I was like, well, like, he's not traumatized by this. I like that the writers haven't forgotten it happened. But yeah, it is weird that Audrey either knows about it or doesn't react to it.
Also, all the talk of, like, if you're ready for a boyfriend sort of suggests that Joey's getting over a breakup with Dawson, which she's not.
Right.
The last boyfriend she had was Pacey, so that makes it kind of weird that he's standing right there.
Yeah, I assume she was talking about herself. Because it also, again, not the point, makes no sense that he would drive. I know that the geography, none of this is real and, like, whatever, but let's pretend it's real Boston. Makes no sense that he would drive her to work.
Right.
Like, at all. But I think they're setting up that they're flirting. And so, yeah, yes. I took it as she was talking about herself in that. Right, because we know that she likes to hook up but does not want to date anybody.
That's true. Good point. Later on, Joey sets her alarm clock back down on her nightstand so we can see it's almost 5 p.m. It's such an unnatural motion. You can see it in the visual aids. She's about to dial the phone, but then there's a knock on the door. It's Elliot asking if 7 is too early for dinner because he knows they said 7:30, but he's worried that might be cutting it too close before the movie. And Joey says she was actually just about to call him and then takes forever to say she thinks she's coming down with something just to make it extremely obvious that she's lying. And you can see in the visual aids an octic of all her many lying faces. This is dumb. Like, Elliot is in a class that Wilder teaches. Joey could so easily just say this school-related obligation suddenly arose. She does still want to go out with him, so, like, they can meet for dessert or go have a drink or see the movie after or whatever. But that would be too sensible.
Yeah, it's such a contrivance. Mm-hmm. And it feels out of character that she would like. I mean, I guess because it's Wilder and, right, she's whatever. But yeah, I hated the scene and everything in this storyline that comes after it. Like, also, the dinner is early. It's established the dinner is early. They can go out afterwards. They can still make the movie, like, whatever. There's so many ways that she could do this that aren't weird.
Right. And especially Elliot being in Wilder's class, he would know, like, he tramples people's boundaries all the time. Like, he's presumptuous and rude.
Right.
Elliot tells her to get some rest and feel better, and she watches him shamble off and feels like a piece of shit, I hope, before lying down on her bed, shoes on, of course, and staring off into space for like 20 seconds while the director once again forgets to call cut. And then it's the Wilder party. Two other girls besides Joey and two guy students are with them. They're all leaving the fancy restaurant. Wilder asking if he left them enough time for their real Friday night fun, since, as you just said, he knew what it meant when they suggested eating at 6. And everyone else who was not signed to have any lines other than an unscripted thanks takes off, and Joey hangs back. Wilder asks if she doesn't have somewhere to go, but she's just heading back to the dorms, in which case she's going in his direction, and he offers her his elbow, which she takes, and I hate it. Time passes. They move on to talking about his novel, Wilder tiresomely denigrating it as a bathroom book you finish before you flush so that Joey will keep complimenting it, which she does.
Right. Why did you assign it then?
Yeah. Hate him
so much.
I'm so embarrassed by this book. Tell me, all of you, what you thought of it. Anyway, she found it honest and complex, then admits it wasn't that complex, but was riveting, especially the part with the girl. That's his favorite part, too. That character definitely doesn't sound too complex if we don't even remember her name.
I do, because I wrote it down, because it's Cedrine, which, what?
No, but that's the real one, I thought.
Oh, maybe. Even so.
Either way, yeah. Joey asks if she was based on a real person, since she has figured out that Wilder's fictional stand-in is Michael. And Wilder asks how she guessed, oh, wait, the bad writing, he says. Like, yeah, again, if you didn't want your students to read it, you wouldn't assign it, so shut up. And then after a break to see Jen on her dinner date, which we'll get to in the A-plot, Joey's still complimenting the book. She could tell Michael was supposed to be Wilder because he was dry and self-deprecating, and she liked him in the book. But, clip 8.
But the girl, she's not how I pictured her at all.
Not how you pictured who?
Your wife.
I don't have a wife.
I remember you told me you had a wife and kid.
Did I?
You did.
I must have been trying to rationalize some bad behavior at the time. I used the wife and kid bit to get me into things I don't want to do.
You're serious? You just lie?
No, I don't lie. I create characters.
So what about the girl in the book? Or is she just another made-up character?
No, Cedrine was very real.
Did you love her?
Yes, I did.
Why'd you break up?
God, a million reasons. I don't know. She was crazy, which is exactly what you want when you're 21.
So many red flags in this one clip.
So many red flags, but also, like, it doesn't make sense that he would keep this lie going for so long when he's had his students over to his house multiple times.
It has to be just a writer retcon, right?
I guess, yeah.
Like, they were like, oops, we made him say that and we don't want him to actually be married. That makes it worse.
Right. That is part of it. The other part is, with a little more experience, Joey will learn that someone who says their ex was crazy is the kind of person who made them that way. But Wilder says you grow out of wanting crazy. Joey asks what you do want when you get older. He wants coffee and invites her to come. So, okay, I'm dying to get your take on this. They take their coffee to a bench by a waterfront. I guess we're supposed to think runs through campus, because, like, on the when they're facing forward, you can see the river or whatever. And then when we see them head on, there's like a dorm or some other campus building behind them. Like, this location makes no sense. Clearly, they're green screened, but, like, think about it.
Right. Because, I think it's actually the Boston skyline across the water. I'm pretty sure. Listeners, don't write in. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, Harvard is close to the river. Mm-hmm. It's conceivable that they could walk to the river.
Right.
If the restaurant was near campus. But I don't know. Again, none of the geography makes any sense. It hasn't for a while. And like these two episodes, especially, it's just mm-hmm. ridiculous. There are literal Confederate monuments in the background of at least one shot. So, yeah, it didn't really bother me mm-hmm. because there were so many other things to bother me in the scene.
Sure. Well, let's get to those. So Wilder asks about the boy Joey wrote about at the start of the season. Joey tells him an abridged version of what we know about Jen and Dawson, ending with, "What can you do?" Wilder says you can start dating. Joey says she's trying, even though it's hard. It's a lot of hassle when you don't know who's actually going to work out for you. So what's the point? He pretends to agree, telling her to give up and enter a convent. She'd look good in a habit. Ugh. She knows he's kidding, but it is an appealing notion for her, she claims. Clip 9.
Come on. And give up all those first crush butterflies? Never.
Yeah, but that's just it. I mean, the butterflies never seem to accompany the right people. You know, the nice guys who are right for you, they never make your stomach go flip-flop.
Brother, that phrasing is your cue that this girl is too young. Go home to your not wife, but he does not pick up on that. Clip 10.
So who gives you flip-flops, Joey Potter?
People who shouldn't.
Well, that hardly seems fair.
So they then stare at each other for so long and take an even longer time leaning toward each other to kiss. And because it's Ken Marino, I'm not trying to say he's not a good actor, but it's impossible for me not to see him as Ron Donald from Party Down, like anytime he tries to be emotional. But anyway, they kiss. After which, clip 11.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. I'm going to go to prison, aren't I?
No. It's okay. I think we can leave the feds out of this one. I think I may have even been an accomplice.
You were? Okay, thank God.
But I should go.
Yeah, great idea. Let's go.
Maybe I should go first.
Yes, you should go. And then I'll go later to my house. And you'll go to your house.
Dorm,
right. And I'll go to my house.
Okay, are we supposed to think he is surprised that things went there? Or that this stammering meltdown is like part of his grooming process to make her say that she's an accomplice? Like,
right. Because also, I mean, not to defend it, she mm-hmm. is 18. He's not yeah. going to prison. Like, it no. all feels, it feels like a lot. It yeah. feels like he's performing something. Mm-hmm. He might get fired, but he's not going to prison.
Yeah.
And I mean, do you think that we're supposed to think that he planned this whole thing, like from the wife lie on?
I think we're supposed to think that he got lost track of it. It got away from yeah. him. And then they ended up here and this isn't what he intended, even though he's so flirty. Like maybe he's just flirty with everybody. And
I guess just from the moment they end up alone after the dinner, it, mm-hmm. it feels off.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. Also not the point. It's even weirder that he lives in that house if he's not married.
Right.
That's like part of the point.
It's so big.
So big.
It's so big that in Capeside, it's like an apartment house. Right. Doug's apartment is, but whatever. So then Joey walks off so slowly, like she's waiting for him to stop her, which he, at least I'll give him that, he doesn't. Out of the commercial break, we get some of the loudest boots crunching snow Foley work I've ever heard. Clip 12. There's no snow on the ground when we see where they are. It's bright green.
Weirdly, on Hulu, they couldn't get the rights to the snow crunching sound, so it's not a thing. So shout out to the Discord.
Nice. Joey is still smiling faintly about her illicit kiss with Wilder when she gets to her door and sees a little care package with a handmade Feel Better Joey construction paper card, even signed Love Elliot.
So cute.
It's so cute. He, like, while he was at the drugstore getting NyQuil and cough drops and shit, he was like, I'm going to get some construction paper and a glue stick and make her a card that says love on it. They haven't even been on a date yet.
It's so cute. There's also the dry erase board on the door mm-hmm. took me back, and I wonder if that's still a thing now that people just text each other.
Oh yeah, good point.
There's definitely a note addressed to Joey on it, and which mm-hmm. made me think, does she have any other friends? Who yes. is leaving her a note on the dry erase board?
Seriously.
But everything about this moment was like, aw.
I know. It also previews Ned Brower's later work playing someone in the medical field on the Pit, and also being a nurse in real life, which I recently discovered.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Anyway, that means that when we saw Elliot walking away from her door, that was a series wrap on Ned Brower. So sorry, everyone who was getting attached. He's all done.
Me. I was getting attached.
I know. Me too. Joey gets back to her room after class some other day to find Audrey doing a headstand and clip 13.
I did it, Joey. I'm a yogi master. I am centered. I am balanced. Nothing can penetrate my inner source of calm.
Audrey, I kissed Wilder last night and just dumped Nice Guy.
Whoa, okay. Ow, that wasn't fair.
Me and Elliot weren't really going out, so technically it wasn't a dump, but I did give him back his NyQuil.
Of course, they kept that conversation off screen because it would make Joey look like the huge asshole that she is. And
I mean, it already
have that.
Does.
Well,
that
true.
That ship has failed.
I guess. Audrey obviously wants to hear more about the kiss and secondarily fulfill her dramatic purpose on the show, which is propping up Queen Joey, clip 14.
Let's just rewind here to the kiss. What happened? And more importantly, was there tongue involved?
Well, we kissed. I pulled away. End of story. Every other girl on campus probably would have slept with him.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you wanted to sleep with him?
No. I don't know it. But I didn't want to stop kissing him.
So why did you?
Because I freaked out. I got scared like I always do.
Okay, that happens.
Yeah, but Audrey, I'm sick of it. I mean, I came to Worthington to change my life and to become a different person. And what happened? My stupid life followed me here.
Yeah, well, that was an unfortunate turn of events.
And I'm trapped. I mean, I can't quite wipe the slate clean because, you know, if I pretend to be somebody new, everybody already knows me here.
Why do you have to be somebody new? If you weren't you, we might not be friends.
Yeah, but... Well, good point.
Think about this, Joey. These opportunities that keep presenting themselves to you, not to me, not to anybody else. And all you have to do is just seize them. Stop wasting your time wishing that you were somebody else and just grab hold of what you have coming to you because... You never know when it's going to come your way again. So, how good of a kisser was he? Like, scale of 1 to 10.
20.
Oh, so cute.
Yeah, it was good. I shouldn't have stopped.
Ugh, stop making me like them together. Audrey, make other friends. Be friends with Jen. Oh, Joey sucks.
It's true. I'm like equally invested in Busy Phillips and Michelle Williams' real life friendship and in Audrey and Joey's on-screen friendship. It's kind of like what's getting me through right now is the two of them.
Seriously. But that's it for the B plot. Let's get to the A plot. Oliver invites Dawson to make student film history, irritating Jen. We open on Jen walking Dawson with his eyes covered and his new film school personal style of long sleeve t-shirt under graphic tee like we have never seen him wear before. Down the stairs, through the house, into a doorway by accident, and then to a seat at the kitchen island where he opens his eyes and sees nothing waiting for him. He points out the flaw in her plan, but she tells him that criticizing the manner in which gifts are revealed will result in his not getting any more, so he quickly says she's very pretty and she forgives him. And then produces a red gift bag after exposition that it's his first day of film school and a side swipe about the cheap fleece at Old Navy. Jen pulls a whole bunch of school supplies out of the bag, ending on an E.T. Trapper Keeper with the tag still on, which if they made it pretty convincing prop and if they found it, not bad, because I'm sure no one was still making those in 2002.
And like weirdly ahead of their time, like in the. You know, where nowadays we're all putting stickers on our laptops and water bottles and stuff. And like giving him a kid's notebook for his first day of college is sort of adorable. And it's a thing I would do like now is use that notebook.
Yep. So Dawson's too stunned to react, seemingly unsure whether this is something Jen sincerely thinks he wants to carry around film school or something she got as a bit. And her saying she thought about putting Reese's Pieces in the pencil case does not clarify things. She asks if he's nervous. He says his 3-course schedule shouldn't be too intense and will leave him plenty of time for naps and drinking, she adds. And after a reminder for us about her radio show, Dawson heads out, almost forgetting the E.T. binder until she chases after him with it and then watches him go, cooing about how cute he is. And when we see him next, after some B-roll that includes a couple of still photos, which you can see in the visual aids.
That's so weird. I noticed it too. It's like, there's regular B-roll of what I assume is meant to be the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, mm-hmm. but I don't think it is. And then the like weird, like pixelated Brutalist building, mm-hmm. of which there are several in downtown Boston. But
sure.
So they're trying to do a thing, but like they're trying too hard because then they're on a real location for the rest of it. Just use mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's very strange.
So Dawson is on campus at what he is intent on calling Viz Arts Boston, beaming at all the evidence of visual arts being studied, including people with painting easels set up on the bright green lawn in Boston in January. He eventually finds his way to the right building, and it seems like he immediately regrets it. Clip 15.
Hey, Dawson Leary!
Oliver, right?
Like you don't remember. So, you're here. You've chosen. Fantastic.
Thanks for the tip.
Don't mention it. Now, let me fill you in on some of the basics of our little school.
Cool. I heard the
girl with the braids claims to have done the nasty with Tarantino. Like, that's an accomplishment, right?
I think she heard you.
Now, the guy with the beret, amazing DP. Picasso with his lighting. Too bad his ego's the size of a small country.
Hi, I'm new here.
Now, the guy up here wrote and directed the worst piece of dreck ever to come out of a film school.
You know what? I'm just gonna introduce myself around.
Okay, hey, whatever floats your boat.
So you can see in the visual aids a gif of people hating Dawson preemptively when they see that he knows Oliver, which Adam caught and made. Nice catch.
Thank you. It was amazing. Those extras earned every time.
And then a triptych of the three people that Oliver points out, all looking at him like, what the fuck? So yeah, Dawson knows one person at the school and it's the one everybody else already hates. So great job. Over to the radio show, Jen, with headphones over hair, as is for some reason still her way, tells listeners who've tuned in expecting Nick Drake to get with the program. She's been doing this advice show for weeks, apparently.
And seemingly at a different time every time, too. So why would right. they know when to tune in?
It's true. There's a bag on her mixing board containing flowers, a teddy bear, and candles that I guess we're supposed to think is from Dawson. Like, I'm not even sure how she knows it's for her. It's not marked. There's nothing else in the episode that indicates he got this for her and put it there somehow. But whatever. Her first caller is Audrey, doing yoga in her room with arm warmers on, asking why guys work so hard to get your number and then only use it for booty calls. And why is it called that anyway, since you never hear anyone say, let's go have booty? Jen reminds Audrey she doesn't need to use her full name every time she calls, since it's supposed to be confidential, but Audrey has nothing to hide. Jen adds that questions don't have to be about sex. Clip 16.
There's love and romance and tenderness.
Are you done with the public service announcement?
Great. Okay, so here's what happened. Saturday night, I'm wearing my new Vin Baker boots. I'm looking good.
I meet this guy. Let's just call him Buttface.
Audrey, I'm going to stop you right there because I already know what's wrong.
You do?
You are just bathing in negative energy. You've lost the love.
I've lost the what?
The love.
And you should find it, you should nurture it, and you should
share your laughter and a warm cup of tea with a man
who is worthy of loving you in return.
You want me to have tea with a worthy man?
I don't want to see you close the door on possibilities, Audrey. I want to see you open up. Let the sun shine in.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I wanted to talk to Jennifer Lindley.
Seriously, this version of Jen is so irritating.
It's so, the writing for her is baffling. And like, mm-hmm. Michelle Williams is selling it. Mm-hmm. Good for her. But like, it's fine that she's happy with Dawson. I don't hate that. Mm-hmm. But they're like overplaying it. She's so schmoopy. It's really weird.
She is. And it's like getting over the line from just schmoopy to like an idiot, especially in yeah. the next episode where she does a lot of stuff that's so dumb.
It's very strange. Do they know each other yet? Have they had a scene together yet?
Yeah, yeah.
Audrey and Jen?
They were at the dinner together that Pacey made.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. Right.
So then Dawson's in a school screening, when Oliver leans forward and drops a gigantic script in his lap. It is Oliver's new screenplay. Dawson assumes Oliver wants him to read it, but actually Oliver wants Dawson to direct it. Dawson starts stammering whatever he thinks will get him out of it, but Oliver just tells him to read it and then compliments the trapper keeper, which, by the way, is positioned on the seat next to Dawson in a way that makes it seem like E.T. is also watching the movie, which I thought was kind of cute.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
Then some other day, Dawson's tapping a pen on Oliver's giant script, obviously waiting for Jen to ask him about it and then seeming annoyed when she does. No, it's not terrible, he says, although he has some thoughts on how to make it better, but there's no point getting into it because he doesn't want to direct someone else's stuff. He wants to make his own. And Jen, playing dumb, asks if Dawson has unproduced material lying around, which he says is not the point. He doesn't want to direct anything right now. A project like that takes over your life and he's just starting to feel normal again. Like, this is a student film. You're going to be working on it for 3 weeks. Like,
right.
Relax.
No one's going to see it.
And no one's going to see it. He says he's not ready to make that kind of commitment, especially not to someone else's film. And Jen just says, oh, I see. And Dawson calls her on using a therapy trick to make him keep talking. Jen says she's required to say when he has a twinkle in his eye. He tries to say it's because of her, but she won't take credit for it. If he likes the script, he should just see what Oliver has to say. Dawson will think about it. And she chirps out to a meeting with her producer, leaving Dawson to growl at Oliver's script. And then one of Dawson's film classes is wrapping up with two fellow students openly mocking his E.T. binder next to him, which Dawson testily tells them was a gift, which was, again, a little funny.
Yeah.
Oliver leaps over seats to get to Dawson and talk about the preliminary shooting schedule he has specced out, but Dawson says he can't do it. Oliver says Dawson's the only one who can. Dawson's flattered, but says it's complicated. Oliver thinks he means the story and starts babbling about the flashbacks he assumed Dawson didn't understand. But Dawson says that's not what he means, but then can't resist adding that he doesn't think Oliver needs the flashbacks. Oliver realizes Dawson cares enough about his script to have notes on it and orders Dawson to have lunch with him. Dawson says he has lunch plans with his girlfriend, but Oliver ignores that. And then we're over to civilization, where Jen is sitting on a kitchen prep area in her dirty street clothes, ranting to Pacey about her producer telling her she's lost her edge, that her shows this week have been terrible, and that if she doesn't start doing things the way she was before, they're going to cancel her. Pacey asks, before what? Jen thinks it must be how she was before Dawson, but she was miserable then and she's happy now. And she was also dating Dawson when they offered her the show. She was just very insecure and defensive then. Pacey's not surprised, telling Jen that no one likes happy people, but Jen can't believe it. Wouldn't he rather get love advice from someone who's in a happy, healthy relationship? Hell no. Pacey prefers to hear from people more dysfunctional than he is so he can feel better about his life. Jen insists that she can get back into a bitter headspace. She just needs Pacey to say something disgusting. He's ready with something sexist or just vulgar, depending on what she wants. But before he can say either, her cell phone rings. Clip 17.
Hello. Hello, my little pumpkin.
Oh, you are so fired.
Rightly so. Fucking barf. Yeah. I don't want to hear that on the radio or at all.
No, again, super out of character and weird.
Mm-hmm. When we see Jen next, she is sitting on Dawson's bed, surrounded by a bounty of regular and porn magazines, as well as several large VHS porn boxes that are not going to do anything for anyone where they are. They're nowhere near a TV or VCR. She's looking at an issue of Lucky that allegedly includes a headline about whether adult women who still wear training bras should get breast implants, which would never be a Lucky story, but not even that can spark any fury in Jen. That's a Cosmo story, if anything. Get her a Cosmo. It's not hard. Anyway, that's when Dawson comes home and quickly tells her the magazines aren't his. And she whines that she's about to lose her show and it's all his fault because he has made her so happy she's boring. And he has no reaction to that, giggling at how cute she looks with that penthouse, and then swoops in to say Oliver wants to come to dinner with them. Jen pouts that Dawson spent all day with him, but Dawson says they've only gotten through half his notes on the script. And Jen, calling Dawson baby, happily assumes that means Dawson's going to direct the movie, but Dawson says he probably isn't, in which case Jen doesn't know why Oliver has to come to dinner with them. Dawson says he doesn't. All she has to do is say the word and Dawson will get rid of him. Like, man, he's your friend. Do it yourself. Don't put this on her. But Jen very insincerely says it's fine. Oliver can come, which is when Oliver himself pops up from behind the staircase where he was clearly eavesdropping to tell Dawson, see, he said Jen would be fine with it. They're both alarmed to see him there even before Oliver comments on all the porn around Jen. And he can at least tell from their glares that he should go downstairs, and does. Dawson insisting he told him to wait there. And they go for pizza, where Oliver argues with all of Dawson's notes and Jen, who apparently also read the script sometime.
Why?
Why? But also when? Like, it's 700 pages long from what we've seen. But she fails to get a word in edgewise and is already seething before Oliver snatches away the last piece of pizza she was already reaching for. So he's that kind of person. And apparently no one wants to split a sundae with her either. Jen, you've collected enough rage for the next episode of your show. Take yourself home. You're on the outside of the booth. Just go. But she doesn't. We rejoin them several scenes later, where she's sitting in furious silence as Dawson and Oliver go back and forth. Dawson finally saying Oliver is too close to the script. And Oliver then fires Dawson from the job. Dawson never accepted and storms out, leaving Dawson to gawp at Jen about Oliver's nerve while Jen waits in vain for Dawson to realize he is just as obnoxious. And the next morning, Jen's in her bedroom doing her makeup when Dawson comes to the doorway and announces he might have handled the previous night better. Jen exhales, thinking he's about to apologize to her, but clip 18.
I mean, poor Oliver, the guy was really upset. You know, and granted, he's obnoxious.
Well, that's an understatement.
But he's got a really unique voice, and he's obviously very passionate about the script, which is a good thing, you know, that's how I would be. Actually, he kind of reminds me of me a little bit. Remember how he used to be?
Uh-huh.
When I was doing the Brooks movie and the one before that.
And the one before that.
Yeah. Which made me realize, I think I am ready to wreck somebody else's words. You know, I've done my own thing enough times. I think this would be an entirely new challenge for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I should apologize to him.
So, as annoying as Jen has been, in this moment, she's the soul of restraint. But finally noticing he's not getting the affirmation he generally feels entitled to, Dawson belatedly notices her attitude. And clip 19.
Are you mad at me?
Well, congratulations to you. Ding, ding, ding. I've only been pissed off at you since last night.
You have?
Yes. First, you totally ditch me for our lunch date, and then you invite Dennis the Menace along to have dinner with us, which is totally infringing on our personal time, which is precious, don't you think?
It absolutely is.
And then you let that loudmouth weasel treat me like I'm a piece of arm candy. Neither one of you listens to a single thing that I have to say, and you have to admit I am completely right about that first sex scene being totally gratuitous. It is just an excuse for Oliver to look at a pair of boobs in the flesh. Why don't you give him $20 and tell him to get a lap dance?
Jenny, I'm so sorry.
Oh my God, it's back! I gotta go!
What's back?
I forgive you.
And then, I mean, that's great. And I'm glad she got there.
Yeah, and I like that Dawson is a little bit self-aware about how he and Oliver are alike, even in the moment that he is completely missing the Jen thing.
Yeah.
And that it sounds like his notes are good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think we've actually gotten to see him be good at making a movie, really. I guess the documentary, but that mostly happened off screen.
Yeah.
I don't hate this.
No, parts of the next episode where they're working on the movie are interesting as well.
Yes.
But we'll get there. When we see Jen next, she's in the booth, not only with her headphones over her hair, but also eating Chinese food on mic. Ugh.
And the mic is so far away, too. Like, everything about it. It's really weird.
She tells a caller whose boyfriend is demanding that she wear thong underwear to dump his ass, and then tells her guy listeners that if it's that important to them that their girlfriends wear thongs, they should try putting a piece of floss between their butt cheeks. See how they like it, which that's so small you might not even feel it. Like, try a watch band. That's probably more like it. Then Dawson's finding Oliver on campus to try to make peace, starting by backing down on one of the scenes he wanted to cut, but Oliver interrupts to say he already cut it. Dawson can't help saying that's good because he doesn't need it. Dawson explains that he was probably trying to sabotage their collaboration because he was trying to coast for a little while. And reading Oliver's script, Dawson got excited at a time when he's trying to feel as little as possible. So good call saying this when your girlfriend's not around to hear it, because that would probably make her feel bad. But Oliver totally gets it. Clip 20.
You were afraid that the upswing of throwing ourselves into a new project would inevitably produce a downswing when you finished it, right? And hey, man, you're probably tired of feeling down.
I am.
Plus the guilt that comes with doing something that might make you feel good when you're supposed to be dealing with this huge thing. You know what, Dawson? I can't guarantee you that none of those things will happen. But if you try to coast through life not feeling anything good just so you don't have to feel anything bad, well, that's no way to live.
I really want to direct your film.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Oliver's normal now.
Yeah, this seems like a great way to get everyone at that school to hate you immediately.
Honest to God. But see, it's not quite over. Dawson wants to know why Oliver doesn't want to direct it himself. And it's because Oliver wants to play the lead. Uh-oh.
Oops.
And that's the episode. Let's close up with our MVP. I'm going to say Pacey. I don't think he puts a foot wrong. He's just giving good advice all around without really having much to do himself.
Same. He breaks up that fight very deftly and then is the only person to take any care of Jack.
Yep, it's true. Least valuable player. I mean, Jack is pretty obnoxious.
Jack is pretty obnoxious. I got to go Joey. Like it. I guess it should be Wilder because he's the predator, but like... But she makes it so much worse by being so shitty to Elliot that she should know better at this point.
Actually, I'm going to change my MVP to Elliot because he doesn't do anything wrong either.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Next time, shooting begins on Oliver's terrible movie, but the drama spills off screen, including into Joey's relationship with Wilder. And believe it or not, continuing problems for Jack and his frat brothers. Speaking of things spilling over, the bounty of information at againwiththispodcast.com. That's where you will find links to enjoy all our visual aids, to buy our merch, and a very special 90210 book, which Sarah and I wrote. And also everything you need to know about getting in the Again With This Club, which you should, because we can't make the main show without paid subscribers, and you get a lot of great perks. Adam, please tell our listeners where they can find your stuff online.
I am at Adam807 on various social medias, and I have a podcast called Muppeturgy. Our latest episode is about Dick Cavett meets ABBA.
Thank God.
Exactly as 1980 as it sounds, and you can find that at Muppeturgy.com.
Amazing. I'm Tara Ariano. I've got to go give someone back his NyQuil. Our guest co-host is Adam Grossworth, though we just call him Nice Guy. And our producer is David T. Cole, my little pumpkin. From all of us here and the absent Sarah D. Bunting, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time. It's like an outtake from Fargo. It's ridiculous.